19.
Good morning, Arthur said, looking up from his desk. I was about to call you.
Sorry, Mike said. Talking with Reggie, Mr. Magnus.
All good things, I hope.
Some good, some bad. Arthur waited a moment, and when Mike didn't continue, he nodded.
We're going to be up and running in about half an hour. Bob's already over at Site B.
He's coming through the other way?
There's no difference. None we've ever been able to detect, anyway. It's the same doorway either direction. We just change it up so we have records of all possibilities.
Ah.
I need to check in with Jamie in the control room, and then we can head out onto the main floor.
Arthur locked the office door behind them, and they headed down the hall toward the stairs. I've got a few questions, said Mike, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
You told the board the Albuquerque door has never failed.
It hasn't.
But what about...
You want to know about the 190s? Jamie mentioned you talked last night.
Mike nodded. It reads like 7 failures to me. Arthur shook his head.
It didn't fail. We couldn't even get the system to activate.
Again, that sounds kind of like failure.
For the door, failure is a collapse of the magnetic field or a technical glitch. You can't lose a race if your horse was never on the track.
You can if it was supposed to be out there, Mike said.
Now you're arguing semantics.
Pot meat kettle. Arthur chuckled.
Point taken.
He swiped his key card and the control room door buzzed open. Jamie glanced over her shoulder at them, then turned back to her monitors.
I am defragging some of Johnny's drives, she said. We should be ready to go on schedule.
Excellent.
He handed her a flash drive.
The changes we talked about.
I'll get them in as soon as I can.
Mike looked down at the main floor. Olaf and Neil were discussing something in front of the mouth. The god mic wasn't on, so he couldn't hear them. Olaf threw back his head to growl at the ceiling and saw Mike watching. He muttered something to Neil, who looked up over his shoulder at the control booth. They split up. Olaf went to his station. Neil headed across the room to check the oversized resistors. He turned back just as Jamie held up a finger for silence.
This is Jamie Parker. It's June 25th, 2015, and this is trial run 169. Traveler is Bob Hitchcock, which I'm sure comes as a complete surprise to everyone listening to these.
She tapped her keyboard.
Are you good? Asked Arthur.
Yeah, she said. I've got everything up here.
He glanced at Mike and gestured at the door.
Shall we?
I'll catch up with you, said Mike. I've got another question or two for Jamie. She glanced at him and sighed. Arthur's shoulders hunched a bit. Then he nodded and turned. The door thumped shut behind him. She turned back to her screens.
What do you want now?
He bit his lip.
Do you do all the hardware work on the computers here? I work on Johnny. Sometimes on the system up here. Sasha or Bob help sometimes, depending.
What about the office computers? She turned to him.
Do you have another problem with something?
Mike took a slow breath. The ants scurried out with a collection of images and sounds. The student code of conduct, lecturing his school's quarterback about plagiarism, slipping Reggie the answers for a pop science quiz junior year. Teachers in the staff room talking in an uninformed way about surveillance and phone lines.
I think, he said, you should disable the Wi-Fi on all the computers here. It's already turned off.
Disable it, he said. Unplug the hardware. Physically remove it. Jamie studied his face.
Why?
He pressed his lips together. They looked at each other for a moment.
You were right, by the way, he added. Your timer wasn't the problem. It was fine.
She furrowed her brows.
Thanks.
He headed back out into the hall. Arthur was waiting for him at the bottom of the stairs.
That didn't take long.
I didn't have much to ask her.
They headed out onto the main floor. The twin rings loomed in front of them. The large flat screen was on and showed Sasha and Bob over at Site B. It struck Mike that he still hadn't gone over to examine the other space.
Defrag's done,
boomed Jamie's voice from a speaker.
We'll be up and ready to go in about 5 minutes.
Excellent, said Arthur.
Hey, Mike, said Bob from the flat screen. This is your first time seeing the door work up close, right?
Yep.
Arthur, said the redhead, can we do a physics test?
I think so.
He glanced at Olaf. Olaf grunted and pitched it high enough to sound affirmative. Mike looked from the screen to Arthur.
Physics test? I saw that on a few dozen reports.
Arthur walked over to the other desk and tugged open the bottom drawer. He removed something and tossed it at Mike, who caught it one-handed. It was a baseball, not a high-end one. It was dirty, but not scuffed. Dropped, but never hit with a bat.
We are up and running,
Jamie said.
Ready in four.
It was Bob's idea, said Arthur. One of those faster, cheaper, better things the government's so fond of.
Mike nodded.
Reggie mentioned this. Mass, acceleration, momentum, angle of descent, tons of math in every throw, and it's apparent if any of it changes in midair.
Exactly.
Gauss field is steady,
Olaf told his microphone. Power is good.
That ball's gone through the door more than anything or anyone else, said Arthur. Throw it back and forth with Bob a few times.
Yeah, come on, Dad, Bob said from the flat screen. Let's have us a catch before you go to work.
Mike smiled.
So, he asked, whatever happened to all the test animals?
Arthur blinked and Olaf looked up from his console. On the flat screen, Bob's smile cracked and he glanced back at Sasha.
What?
All the animals that went through the door. 216 rats, 6 cats, and a chimpanzee, yes?
Something like that, said Arthur. Why do you ask?
Just curious. They all looked at Mike.
A third of the rats were dissected to check for any structural or anatomical issues, Arthur said. A third of the others were kept under observation for 3 months each before dissection. The remainder were allowed to live out their lives. None of them ever showed any signs of damage, even on a cellular level.
Who did the observations?
Graduate students at San Diego State. Double-blind observations. They knew nothing about the Albuquerque door.
Statistically, said Olaf, the door rats had lower cancer rates than the control group.
Not notably, said Arthur. It could have been a fluke. The cats went to a shelter after 6 months of observation.
I found homes for 3 of them, Bob said. People I knew so we could check on them if we ever needed to.
Ready in 3.
Mike glanced up at the booth.
Is Glitch one of them?
No.
Olaf, Neil, and Bob all answered, but the speakers let Jamie's voice dominate. They glanced at one another. The hoses from the tanks hissed and frosted over. The temperature in the big room dropped by a few degrees. Mike wasn't sure it was from the liquid nitrogen.
And the chimpanzee?
He asked.
6 months of observation, said Olaf. And then Magnus had him sent to a farm up north.
Mike blinked.
No, really, said Neil, leaning back in his chair. There's a big wildlife farm for retired movie animals and some test animals up by Los Angeles. I've gone up to see Caesar twice.
Caesar?
On the flat screen, Bob smiled.
What else do you name a chimpanzee who changes the world?
Olaf sent a stare at Mike. The temperature went down a few more degrees.
If that's all, we're trying to run an experiment.
Sorry, didn't mean to distract you.
Ready in 2.
No worries, said Sasha from the screen. Everyone gets a little nervous first time they're near it.
Bob waved at Mike.
You still want to throw the baseball?
Yep.
They don't talk about this part, said Bob. But I think there's something very soothing about tossing a ball back and forth. I call it the Hitchcock effect. I think it helps the brain cope with the idea of a fold in space on a psychological level. That's my opinion anyway.
You're not a psychologist, said Olaf. Your opinion's worthless.
Olaf's jealous because the effect won't be named after him, Bob said.
Bob,
Olaf said without looking at the flat screen,
how long has it been since I asked you to shut up?
A few hours at least.
That explains why it's worn off.
Mike tossed the ball from hand to hand and took a few steps toward the mouth. The air around the rings seemed to waver and twist.
Even though the room was cool, it still looked like heat haze. The rear wall blurred. It was still clear at the center of the rings, but the ripples were spreading inward.
"We've got a solution," boomed Jamie. "Ready in one."
"Mike," called Neil. "Watch the line."
He glanced down at the white lines.
"Am I safe here?"
"You can be standing up on the pathway when it opens if you like. Just don't cross the line."
The circle of still air inside the ring shrunk more and more. Mike estimated it was 2 feet across at the most, then 18 inches, then less than a foot. The faint hiss of carbonation began to grow. He couldn't tell where it was coming from.
"Power is good," said Olaf. "Flux density is at full. Opening the door."
He tapped 3 buttons, and the rings sparked and shimmered. One moment the heat haze view through the mouth was the back wall of the main door, about 20 feet past the second ring. It was cinder blocks with at least 2 coats of white paint. He could see a few conduits running high along the wall and a fire extinguisher hanging on a square hook. Then, like a television switching channels, a third ring appeared, and Bob stood 10 feet away, grinning. The pathway stretched back beneath his feet to another ramp. The wall behind him was almost 50 feet away, and now it was sky blue. Equipment and desks filled the space between them. Sasha sat at one of them, checking her own instruments.
"Field has cohesion," said Jamie. "The door is open."
Bob waved to them from Site B.
"Hey."
Mike glanced down at the white lines, then leaned to the left.
"Careful," said Neil.
"I see them."
Just past the rings, Mike could see the rear wall of the building, right where it was supposed to be. He looked the other way through the metal and ceramic rings and saw the wall of Site B twice as distant.
"It's amazing."
"Yes, it is," said Arthur.
"Hey, rookie,"
Bob said, smiling. He held up his hands and flexed his fingers.
"This is the big leagues now. Show me what you got."
Mike looked at the ball in his hand.
"Just toss it?"
"Yep." He lobbed it through the rings. His eyes followed it through the air, watching for a waver to show him when it went through the door. He couldn't see anything. Bob caught the ball with both hands.
"Not bad," he said. "Try this one."
He lifted the baseball for an overhand throw. Mike studied its path through the air again. He waited for a glitch, for the arc to shift, for something to happen. Nothing did. The ball bounced off his fingertips and rolled across the floor. Arthur and Bob chuckled. Olaf smirked. Neil scooped up the baseball and tossed it back to Mike.
"Don't overthink it," said Bob. "It's just throwing a ball."
Mike sent the ball through the rings again. Bob plucked it out of the air and threw it straight back. Mike caught it. It was just like catching a ball tossed across the room. A ball tossed 12 feet at most. He lobbed it through again, and it slapped against Bob's palm.
"Now you're thinking with portals," Bob said with a grin. "For the record, this ball's going 1,600 feet every time we toss it. That's about 15 miles a minute, so you're pitching a 900-mile-per-hour fastball."
"What's the world record?" asked Mike. He tried an underhand pitch and watched Bob catch it. Still nothing.
"Depends on how they measure it," said Neil. "Nolan Ryan hit 108 back in the 70s, but most people say Chapman's 105 is more accurate, so he's got the current record."
"Only until we go public," said Bob.
He tossed the baseball back to Mike.
"We have 35 seconds left," Jamie said from the booth.
"Copy that," said Bob. He gestured to Mike and cupped his hands to catch the last throw. He raised his head as the ball smacked into his hand.
"For the record, this is now my 84th time through the door. That means half of all the crosswalks made by human beings have been made by me, if you round up. I am guaranteed a place in every history book on Earth."
"Are you coming through?" said Olaf.
"If not, I'd like to close the door so I don't have to listen to you."
"That's your jealousy talking again," said Bob as Mike glanced back at Olaf.
"It really—"
Olaf's face shifted. Neil screamed. So did Sasha. And Arthur. Mike spun back to the rings, bumped into the other man on the walkway, and stepped back in surprise. He didn't compensate for the ramp, and his foot found empty air. He fell back on his ass and slid to the floor, and the figure on the walkway stepped forward to loom over him.